Hey, it's Joe. Older athletes, no pain. What we want is to understand how to stop the pain without giving up the athletic endeavors that add so much to our lives and to our health. Today in episode 151, Rick Olderman rejoins the Wise Athletes podcast to revisit his pain resolution lessons from 2 years ago, plus his additional insights from learning to provide hands-off, remote physical therapy to his patients. The key to his success is a deep understanding of body mechanics combined with critical diagnostics, which zero in on exact solutions. In this episode, we use examples of my own lower and upper back pain to illustrate Rick's method, which will be super helpful to anyone suffering with back pain. Pain is definitely not just in your head. Yeah, listen in as Rick explains how to find out where your pain is coming from and how to stop it. All right, let's talk to Rick Olderman. Rick Olderman, welcome back to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Gosh, can you believe it has been 2 years? I mean, think more than 2 years since you were on the show with Glenn and I. Man, time really flies. I just recently went back and listened to it. It was from 2022. And I got two funny things to say. One was that while I really almost tragically had forgotten the details of the conversation, you know, darn it. The good news is that I had incorporated one of the things that we had talked about into my life, the soft knee walking thing. And so that when I redid the little back pain test that you did then, and maybe you still do, I had no back pain. So I was so tickled that I was like, well, that really worked. That's great. The second thing that I'll mention is that I have been recently experiencing some upper back pain that's been annoying me. And I discovered that there was a solution to that too in that old episode that I had lost track of. And, you know, dang it. So I started implementing it and solved it. So thanks again. But gosh, I really have got to come up with a better solution. I've done 150-ish episodes by now, and it's just like drinking from the fire hose. You know, I got to come up with a way to learn stuff because, you know, putting things into my habits, that's the best way. But, you know, life happens and habits get broken. And then what? I've lost, you know, I don't even remember that I've forgotten some good habits. So I don't know. Maybe you've got some idea on how I can keep track of things that I ought to, you know, if you got a pain here, check on that. Anyway, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me. And the nice thing is there's a very easy way to know whether your bad habits could come back, because your pain comes back.
Yeah, I'm talking about the good habit that I forgot.
That's what I mean. So when those good habits go away, pain starts to ensue again. And so that's your reminder. That's your body saying, hey, pay attention.
I guess the only thing I could do then is just to say, I need to go listen to that episode again.
There you go. Mark it as one of your favorites.
Fantastic. Well, so I have already done that. All right, so you have written a new book. It's called Pain Patterns?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about this book. When you kicked that off, tell us why did you write a new book? Because you had written a bunch of things before.
Yeah, this is my ninth book.
Wow.
I wrote this one because over the years since I've talked to you, Joe, I've been helping more and more people via telehealth. Mm-hmm. So I've had to distill my treatment to a video representation of what I care about in the body. And so what this did was it really honed my tests to get down to the core problem without using my hands. And so this changed some of the tests that I did, and it made me aware of, I started to see a pattern emerge from my testing. And this pattern started to match my philosophy of why all of this stuff is happening. And so I started to realize with these several tests that I have in this book and that I've been doing and honing over YouTube for the past few years, I realized, oh my gosh, this is the stuff that I've implemented in my clinic, but I didn't realize I was implementing in my clinic because I got to use my hands. And so, you know, it confounded the purity of the information. And so when I didn't get to use my hands any longer, I had to distill that information down to make it effective for people via telehealth. And so that's what this book is representing. And it goes back to the roots of my whole philosophy of how I developed this whole approach in the first place. And I've, you know, I've created this online course for health and wellness practitioners. And in that course, I wrote a 10-page neurophysiology paper. And so about a year ago or a year and a half ago, I looked at that paper and I said, oh, this is exactly what I've been doing over telehealth. And I'm just thinking, you know what, maybe I'm going to develop this paper a little bit to flesh it out to help practitioners more. And so I thought, instead of a 10-page paper, maybe it'll be a booklet, you know, right? And then soon it became this book. And so that's how all of this came about.
Awesome. Well, you know, that's, I guess it's inevitable that learning like that happens. I mean, they say, if you want to know if you actually know something, then teach it. And then you'll discover, you'll really learn it at that point. But if you're doing a like a PT type practice that's hands-on, and now you have to do it without your hands on, wow, you really have to know what you're doing to be able to explain it to somebody.
Yeah, and I have basically the same results as when I did hands-on work too. Mm-hmm. And part of that is just getting down to, you know, the nature of how our body is creating pain. And that's what this book, the first section of this book talks about how that happens. And we can discuss that if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the second part of the book is a workbook that takes people through testing their body. And you mentioned one when we were talking earlier about that back pain test that I had 2 years ago. Yeah. That's also featured in this book, but all the other tests as well. So not only are you identifying your pattern of pain, but in that workbook section, you're identifying why you're having that pattern of pain. Uh-huh. And so fixing those causes will fix that pattern and your pain.
Awesome. I do want to at least touch on all of this stuff. Let's set the stage first. You'll remember that the Wise Athletes podcast is for the older athletes. So that's people like me.
And me.
Awesome. And one of the things that you and I and everybody listening knows is that older athletes have pain in their bodies. I'm going to say I remember, but what I remember is talking about it rather than actually remembering a time in my life when I didn't have pain. But I can remember talking about how when I did have pain, it was kind of an unusual thing. And that would be a subject of discussion. You know, why did I have this pain? You know, nowadays it's like, I always have pain. You know, you get up in the morning and you're stiff. And, you know, part of my daily ritual is I do my mobility stuff. And kind of what that is unkinking myself and getting to where, you know, I get rid of the pain by sort of, I don't know, concentrating it and getting it all out, you know, and then I'm fine for the rest of the day. But still, you know, in the morning I wake up, I can tell how old I am. On top of which maybe that I had a hard workout yesterday or the day before, or I re-injured myself, or, you know, all of those things that don't seem to go away in sub 24-hour periods anymore. So to the extent that, you know, as a pain fixer, you can help us again to know what are we doing to ourselves that's contributing to this, and what can we do to stop contributing to it, and or, you know, once we've done the wrong thing again, what can we do about it? These are wonderful tips that you can give us.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's back out and look at it from a macro level first, and which is that evolutionarily speaking, we weren't supposed to be living this long anyway, right?
Speak for yourself.
So, you know, our life expectancy, you know, hundreds or thousands of years ago was 30 or 40 years. And our joints work just fine with that kind of life expectancy. Mm-hmm. But now we're living so much longer. So of course there's compounded, you know, force and attrition that's due to just living longer than we were originally expected to live. So some of that compression is coming from bad habits, and some of it's just from aging of cartilage in joints or tightening of ligaments because of, you know, if you think about what you did when you were 10 years old, it's certainly not what you're doing now, sitting in a chair for 8 hours a day.
Oh my God.
You didn't do that when you were 10, right? And then when that happens over decades, well, then tissues respond to that. So they become shorter, they become tighter. You develop neurological patterns of, you know, contraction that are habitually recruited that cause certain muscles to remain tight or contracted and other muscles to remain off and non-contracted because of how you're using your body. So all of this adds up over time, leading to these morning aches and pains and things that we feel during the day.
I'll add one thing more to that list. Yeah, obviously age and accumulating decrepitude. And then there's the habitual mistakes that we make, you know, whether it's sitting in a chair or having the wrong kind of mattress or whatever. But then there's this stuff that people do to themselves in an effort to feel better, right? Because, you know, some of the things that we do are things that we think are true and they're false, right? Mm-hmm. You had said something that really made me laugh again when I re-listened to that podcast, is that strong people think they need to get stronger to get better, and flexible people think they need to stretch to get better, and athletic people tend to attribute their pain to their extreme efforts or maybe their past injuries. Anyway, so it's all this stuff that people know that's not really true. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I stand by that. I mean, that's the pattern I see. You know, I see hypermobile people. Well, what stretch do I need to do to, you know, work out this pain? Well, I'm sorry, it's not a stretch. You're hypermobile. And then, you know, you see big weightlifters. Well, okay, you know, what am I supposed to do to be able to lift this 500 pound, you know, deadlift? Right. Well, maybe do less deadlifting.
Don't say that. Yeah.
Of course. So, you know, unfortunately, in my career, you have to say things that people don't want to hear, right? Yeah. And because that's why they're paying me, is to tell them the truth of things. So I stand by that reasoning because that's what people keep showing me.
Right. Yeah. And I know that it's fashionable these days, and I think it's even in your book, it's fashionable to talk about how, you know, pain is in your brain and pain is almost like an emotion that, you know, your brain is using to communicate with you about things that it doesn't want you to do or behaviors that it associates with danger and things like that. And I can't argue that that's not true. I mean, what the hell do I know? And I maybe even experienced something along those lines with some knee pain that I had at one point that just would not resolve, for nothing would resolve it. And then suddenly it was gone, you know, just like suddenly it was there. But I'm not really satisfied with those kind of things. Anyway, so tell us what you think. But what I am interested in mostly is sort of what we talked about the last time and any new learnings around that, which is this idea of we are stressing our bodies all the time. Some of the stress comes from the hard exercise that I'm doing, you know, on my bike or when I lift that thing wrong, but also the stress comes from me just sort of living my life in a way that I'm not really aware is a stress, right? Sitting in a chair or a soft bed. And all of these stresses are what accumulate to put perhaps too much stress and too little recovery on some particular part of the body. And so when we want to, when we have got pain, you know, maybe, and let's call it real pain, you know, I've got a real irritation of the tissues, not just a fear of it, then I need to back off of that stress. And maybe I back off by riding my bike less, but maybe I take the stress down a bit by sitting up straight in my chair, something like that. What do you think?
Well, there's a lot to unpack in that. So let me deal with the first part about the part of about pain being in your brain.
Okay.
So this is where physical therapy seems to be going. I typically disagree with it. I think while all of those things may be true, I think we are overemphasizing that so that we do not have to do the hard work of figuring out why someone's actually having pain. And so there are things in the body. There's fascia. I think you've heard of fascia, right?
Sure.
Well, there's fascia is connective tissue in the body, and there's a certain type of fascia called myofibroblasts, which are laid down in mechanically stressed areas of your body. Myo refers to muscle. So myofibroblasts have up to 6 times contractile capacity of regular fascia. Hmm. So what activates myofibroblasts to contract is not a neural input from your brain. It is a hormone-like molecule called a cytokine, the transforming growth factor beta 1. So when we are stressed, traumatized, have PTSD, anxious, you know, whatever, that causes the release of this cytokine, which circulates in the bloodstream to activate the myofibroblasts, which are laid down in mechanically stressed areas of the body already. So the myofibroblasts then cause a prolonged subcontraction underneath the typical muscular contraction. So if we think about our biceps muscle, my brain says, bend your elbow. And so my biceps muscle contracts to bend my elbow. My brain says, okay, let your elbow straighten again. And it turns off that contraction. Mm-hmm. So that happens relatively quickly. However, myofibroblasts have a slower lead-in and a much longer tail to their contractions because it's a chemically based contraction or hormone-based contraction rather than a neurologically based contraction. And so while myofibroblasts can't cause your biceps muscle or elbow to bend, it doesn't have that kind of force that it generates on joints. It creates a longer level subcontraction of stressed areas of your body, which contributes to the chronicity of pain. And we can go deeper into that if you want to. But to go to your other areas that you were talking about. So what you were talking about, you know, should I sleep on a softer bed? Should I sit up straighter? All of these are guesses because you don't really understand why you're having pain in the first place. And this is largely, I'm afraid to say, I'm really sad to say, that's largely what a lot of medicine is about, is throwing things against the wall to see if they stick. All right. Instead of doing testing of the body to understand why the pain is happening in the first place. And so this is why we're left guessing, well, should I do this? Should I do that? You know, should I ride my bike more? Should I ride my bike less? Well, let's look at how you're riding your bike to see, and let's test your body to see whether what your deficits are and how those are playing out and how you're riding your bike, if you believe riding your bike is the cause of your pain. So this is why in general, you know, and I'll probably get in trouble for this, Joe, but I disagree with where physical therapy is going with this overemphasis on the emotional component of pain. Yes, that's true. I just explained the potential mechanism of that occurring, and it does happen, but that is not all of it. And I believe what we've been missing in medicine is an understanding of how the body is built architecturally that includes movement, fascia, and neurological reflex patterns. When you blend these three things together, which is what my book explains, this is really what I have found is the root cause of the pain that we're having. And then the tests that I have in the book expose what is causing those patterns to occur in you.
Okay. You got me. I'm interested. I'm sure that you've got I don't want to say elevator pitch, but you've got a way of talking about this with a little more detail. And if you could also, maybe as you did before, give us some examples or maybe even instructions.
Yeah. So we did one of these tests in our last talk together and you brought it up.
Yeah.
So the test for one of these patterns, one of the patterns is called an extension pattern. And what that means, extension for the lumbar spine means that it has too much arch. It's also referred to as a lordotic spine, which shouldn't be confused with a sway back posture. So a lordotic spine is that kind of military erect spine that you see a lot of people have. And you'll especially see this in people who are heavy. If they carry their weight in their belly, that tilts the pelvis forward, causing a lordotic spine to occur. Or they could be an athlete who's been drilled into their, you know, mind all these years that they must stand up erect as possible, you know, shoulders back, chest out, that kind of stuff. Well, that creates a lordotic spine. If you just do that right now, you'll feel that your spine becomes hyperlordotic to do that. All right. So that's called an extension problem. So what I've show in the book is that an extension problem is not only due to how you're using your body, which is a movement-based idea, right? It's also due to super lines of super highways of fascia that run through your body that were discovered by Thomas Myers. He identified one of those lines of fascia is a superficial back line of fascia, which runs from the top of the head to the bottom of the feet along the back of our body. That can be dissected from the body as one contiguous piece of tissue. All right. It's all connected. So you can imagine if all those tissues running from the head to the foot in the back of your body are contracted, that will also create a hyperlordotic spine. Just use your imagination. This is also coinciding with a deeper neurological reflex pattern that we're born with called a Landau reflex. The Landau reflex is what allows us as babies to lift our head when we're crawling. It arches the spine and the neck to lift the head to crawl. All right. This is further developed when we are, you know, growing. When if you're walking out in a deep, dark forest and you hear something crack, you know, 5 feet away from you, you immediately come to attention, right, to find out what that is. That is a reflex pattern that's tapping into the Landau reflex. Your brain isn't saying, oh, I think I'm going to stand up tall to see what's going on here. No, it happens like this without your brain even paying attention to it. And this is what happens with also emotional stressors, trauma, anxiety, PTSD, things like that. We're caught in this kind of hyper alert situation, which is tapping into that Landau reflex. Well, that Landau reflex is the same pattern of movement that an extension problem pattern is with those people who are trying to be military erect with their posture all the time. And it coincides with the superficial back line of fascia that runs through our body. So all three of these things can blend together to form the same pattern of dysfunction, an extension problem. And so I name the problems, the three patterns, based on the body's movement or position that's causing the pain, rather than saying, oh, well, this is due to a reflex. Oh, well, this is due to your fascia. Oh, this is due to your movement. No, they all blend together. So you can't isolate just one thing and say, oh, this is definitely a reflex, an overactive reflex pattern. No, it all comes together. So to go to your original question, how do I test for something like this in me? This is exactly what we did last time. So you can lay down on the floor with your legs straight and feel your back pain or sciatic pain or SI joint pain or whatever pain you have. And then stay there for 30 seconds. And then bend your knees so your feet are flat on the floor. And your back should feel better in one of those two positions. If it doesn't, then bring your knees up to your chest and hug those and see if that feels better. So all we're doing with that simple test, Joe, is seeing, does my back feel better when it's more arched or when it's less arched? Simple. And when your legs are straight, your back is more arched. When your legs are bent, your back is less arched. 99% of people with chronic back pain, sciatica, SI joint pain will say, oh, they don't even need to do the test to know the answer to this. My back feels much better when my knees are bent than when they're straight. So you've just identified one of your pain patterns that's causing your pain. And then, Joe, you talked just at the very beginning of this podcast about one of the reasons that's happening, which is you discovered that when you unlock your knees, your back pain goes away.
Not instantly, but over time.
Over time, of course. But even it can almost be instantly. If you just stand up and now discover that you have an extension problem and you stand up for the next 30 to 60 seconds, you'll notice that either one or both of your knees will start to lock backwards, right? This is an energy conserving move because now we get to stand on our joints rather than use our muscles. And especially as we age, we veer more towards standing on joints than using muscles. All right. So if you're doing this right now and you haven't locked your knees yet, go ahead and lock your knees and you'll feel that your back is arching more. You'll even feel tension in the lumbar spine contributing to that arching. It's turning on muscles. And then unlocking the knees, you'll feel that tension go away. Well, that subtle difference between locking and unlocking the knees is affecting the pelvis just enough to remove an extension stressor to your spine, which you've identified as one of the patterns of your pain.
If your back hurt when you lay it on the back with your legs straight.
Right. Okay. And so that's why unlocking the knees, that's why this goes back to what you said originally. Should I sit up in my chair more? Well, probably not if you have an extension problem. You should probably go against that training in your brain that says, oh, I need to be more erect because that's why I'm having pain, is because I'm too slouchy. No, if you go more erect, you're reinforcing the extension pattern that is creating your pain in the first place. But you won't know that if you don't test it first.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel a lot of people are missing, is that they keep throwing all this stuff against the wall, wondering, well, how? I can't possibly tell you until I test you. You can't possibly know until you're tested. And so my book will take you through those tests so that you can understand what it is you're trying to figure out and then figure it out.
That's great. And I'll tell you that the learning that maybe I got it a couple of years ago when you said it originally, but maybe I didn't. Maybe it was just a trick that, just do this test, and then if it hurts, then didn't do that thing. But because I have, I've had 80 some podcasts since, there's a lot of similarities in the right way to think about health in different aspects of the body. And what you were saying 2 years ago, you're saying now, I want to sort of put it in my own words, first of all, to confirm that I'm understanding, and then help the audience to really make sure that they're getting. And it's this, that the answer is not to figure out what is perfect posture and the perfect chair and the perfect bed and the perfect everything in order to have health and have no pain. That's just sort of an impossible task. There's no need even to do that. The issue is, if you have pain somewhere in your body, then you're irritating it somehow. And the irritation comes from too much stress and too little recovery. And so you don't need to, in fact, it would be bad to eliminate all the stress on your body. Your body would just fall into a pile of goo eventually. Progressive overload, that's how you get stronger. But progressive means that you don't do too much too fast, and you give yourself a chance to recover and to adapt to the stress. And so you get stronger over time. Well, it's got to be the same thing for my lower back. That if my lower back is sore when I'm laying on the floor, my legs are straight, then it's because I'm doing something wrong. And probably I'm doing a bunch of things wrong. If fixing one of them is enough to get me below the threshold of the pain, then that's enough to get me out of where my back doesn't hurt anymore. And frankly, that's what's happened. My back does not hurt anymore when I lay on the floor. And I believe that where that came from was in employing this soft knees when I walk. Don't walk stiff-legged. I do a decent amount of walking. A lot of people try to get their 10,000 steps. Well, if you're doing 10,000 stiff-legged steps, that's got to be a lot of stress on your lower back.
You're absolutely right. It's not that you walk. It's that you walk correctly. So walking could actually be digging you deeper into your hole if you're not walking correctly. And everyone, invariably at my clinic, people would say, I've been walking for 80 years. You can't tell me I've been doing it wrong. Yeah, you actually are. And let me change it and then see how your body feels. And invariably, they feel better because these habits creep into your. Okay, so this gets into the brain chapter of the book. The brain is what is housing these neurological patterns that you have, all right? Let's say you're a pitcher and you do 100 pitches a day so that you get down that motion, right? What your brain is doing is creating more efficiency for the motion that you want to use. The brain isn't telling you, no, that's not right. This isn't right. You're supposed to be pitching like this. The brain doesn't say that. The brain just says, oh, that's how you want to do it. That's how I'm going to help you do it then. I'm going to reinforce that neurological pattern. So what happens over time is, as we age and our muscle mass decreases, right? We become more and more inclined to straighten our knees to use less energy. right? Because mm-hmm. we're getting older, we feel less energy. So we're not going to use it up just standing and walking, right? And so the brain says, oh, that's how you want to do it? That's fine. I'll just make sure that we do this all the time now. And then if you don't do that, I'm going to send out an alert that says, oh, you're doing this wrong now. This isn't how you taught me to do it. Mm-hmm. And this is why you get alerts from your brain that say, when you started unlocking your knees, Joe, I bet you were just like, whoa, this is weird. This feels different.
Yeah.
I'm not sure this is the right thing for me.
Yeah.
Those are judgments that your brain is placing on those alerts it's receiving because you're doing something different. Your brain, though, does not know whether that is a good thing or a bad thing yet until you do it for a length of time, a week or whatever, and your pain either gets worse or it gets better. Mm-hmm. That will educate your brain. But so many people, when they start to change their habits, they throw out those ideas because their brain is sending these alerts and they attach an emotional response to that alert that includes frustration, this can't be right, you know, kind of thing. And so they go revert back to their old habits because it becomes too annoying to change their habits into a healthy habit instead. This is how the brain works. And this is why a lot of habits get reinforced that are bad habits, and we can't reinforce and we can't understand what is it I'm doing because I'm doing the same things I've been doing all my life. Exactly. That's the problem.
Hmm. The idea is that we don't have to learn to be perfect. If we have a place where we have pain in our body, we're doing something wrong or we're doing too much of the wrong thing, and we just need to find a way to, instead of giving up my exercise, which is good for my health in lots of ways, I can give up walking stiff-legged, you know, which doesn't cost me anything, except I just have to do it long enough until it feels normal.
Yeah. I had an email from a guy. He had been dealing with sciatic pain for 3 years, been to a ton of practitioners. All he started doing, he got one of my home programs, and he did the taping of the backs of the knee. He said that took away his sciatic pain. He said, why hasn't anyone else taught me this simple solution?
Tell us what that is. I don't remember this. Taping the back of the knee?
Well, it's the same concept of what you're talking about, is softening knees. Uh-huh. So in my program, I have a taping technique where you apply tape to the backs of your knees, which reminds you. And uh-huh. that is the cue that, oh, you're starting to lock your knees again, because your brain isn't going to sense that. Your brain is saying it's going to constantly try to get back to the way that things have always been done. It wants to go back into that rut, right?
It's cool.
You're trying to dig a new rut. Brain doesn't like that.
Awesome.
And so I have a little technique, tape in the backs of the knees, works beautifully. That alone solved this guy's sciatic pain. Now, I couldn't have, if he would have called me and said, Rick, what do I need to do to solve my sciatic pain? I have no idea because I haven't tested your body. You know, I don't know what you're doing that's causing your sciatic pain. And a lot of people believe that, oh, you have sciatic pain, you do these three things. You have back pain, you do these two things. It'll take 20 seconds and your back pain. No, because you don't know why you're having the pain in the first place. Do you have an extension problem? Do you have a flexion problem? Do you have a side bending problem? And if you haven't done any of that testing, how could you possibly know what's going to solve that pain? And this is why those kind of recommendations work for maybe, you know, 10% of the people. And chances are the practitioner that's recommending, oh, if you just do these three things, you know, this will solve all of your pain. That's probably working for maybe 40% of their clientele. And so they make a little video of it. And so they say, this will solve your pain. No, you know, it's not the whole answer. You've got to test your body to understand where the problems are. How else can you solve something?
Well, so give us some other ones. I mean, this low back thing, I think, has probably touched, you know, most people. What other kinds of things? So here's the thing that I was having, and I had forgotten about the desk setup tips that you had given us before, but I was experiencing upper back irritation. You know, it was just, you know, I could just feel that it was, you know, a little sore. And then if I would like be on a foam roller, it'd be like, wow, I really have some soreness in there. What would you say to me if I called you up?
Well, typically the upper body functions as a different system than the lower body and low back system. So let's go back to that extension problem test where I had you lie with your legs straight on the floor and then bend your knees. Mm-hmm. If your back pain or sciatic pain changes because of the position of your legs, what does that tell you, Joe?
It's a lower body thing?
Yeah, that it has something to do with your legs, right? So the upper body system has less to do with the legs. It has more to do with the shoulder blades. The shoulder blades are the center of function for the upper body system. Mm-hmm. They're like the pelvis of the upper body system.
Yeah, the shoulder blades are kind of like the hips, but it kind of moved out.
You're exactly right. If you look at the structure, the architecture of those bones, they are broad, flat bones in the shoulder blade. They are broad, flat bones in the pelvis. Nowhere else in the body do these types of bones occur. Mm. All right? They are meant to be foundational aspects of movement. And so if you have any kind of upper body system problem, neck pain, headaches, shoulder, upper back pain, it's usually because of something's wrong with the shoulder blades. Mm. However, most practitioners don't know how to measure shoulder blades. This is what I found when I went to a talk given by an elite physical therapist who was having shoulder pain problems. He said, and at the end of the talk, he said, you know what, guys, since we're in a room of physical therapists, I'm having shoulder pain problem. Can someone assess my shoulders and see why I'm having pain? Not one person stepped forward. I said, I'll assess him. We immediately discovered what the problem was. We figured out why he was having that problem, and we gave him that exercise that solved the problem. Wow. And everyone else was just left scratching their heads because they don't understand how to understand the role of the shoulder blade in pain, first of all, much less test it. And so that's the key to the upper body system pain, is understanding shoulder blades. And I mentioned that in the book too.
Awesome. Well, give us like a real life, maybe this example. I know that there's no like general advice, but
sure.
Pick a specific example and the specific solution.
Yeah, for upper body system problems, saying? Okay. So typically, the most common problem with shoulder blades is that they rest too low. All right? There are rules about where it should be resting. It should be resting at thoracic level 2. And when they're not, and most people with chronic pain issues, headaches, neck pain, upper body system, shoulder blade, you know, shoulder pain, their shoulder blades are resting too low. Why are they resting too low? This goes back to one of the reasons is what we talked about earlier with back pain. This is one of the connections. If you believe that you should be standing up with a military erect posture, automatically to do that, you are depressing your shoulder blades.
So you're putting your shoulders down?
Down. If you've been in gymnastics, dance, swimming, I found is another one, or do a lot of yoga, or Pilates, all of these disciplines value a longer neck. Mm. And if you look at those people, they all walk around like this, right? Really stiff. And look at my posture. It's so erect. It's so wonderful. And look at my beautiful long neck. Well, what you're doing is depressing your shoulder blades to create that posture. And that's why a lot of dancers leave dance or struggle with chronic neck pain and headaches because of that reason. Gymnasts too. All right. So your posture strategy could be depressing your shoulder blades. Now, if you're a guy and you're doing a lot of weightlifting, right? Yeah. And you know, I'm gonna get that 300-pound bench press, right? Uh-huh. Well, what you're doing is you're developing your pectoralis muscles. Guess what? Those are scapular depressors. Uh-huh. And so how you're using your exercise and what you choose to focus on as valuable to you could be the exact thing that's causing the problems that you're having. So when the shoulder blades are resting too low, the whole function of the shoulder blade is to assist the arm with overhead motions. All right. They're supposed to elevate, upwardly rotate, and abduct away from the spine, move away from the spine. Those people with depressed shoulder blades, typically that's not happening. So the arm is raising overhead, but the shoulder blade isn't helping them, which leads to overuse issues in the shoulder joint, causing tissue breakdown, rotator cuff tears, things like that. Hmm. Well, for neck pain and headaches, there's a muscle that attaches from the shoulder blade into the neck bones called the levator scapula. Most people, when they have neck pain and headaches, they say, oh, it kills me right here. And then they go to someone who says, oh, well, that's your upper trap. You've got lots of knots in your upper trap. No, it's not the upper trap. It's the levator scapula, which is deep to the upper trap. And the key is not to massage all of that out. While that's temporarily helpful, the key is to use the shoulder blade correctly so the levator scapula is not stressed any longer.
So tell us, what sort of a, I don't know, is it an exercise? I mean, what do you do if you've got a lifetime of shoulders down and back and you've got this problem?
Well, first of all, you test yourself to see whether this is the case for you. And I have that test in the book. And then I have recommendations of how to correct that.
Okay.
But one of those, if you are that military erect person, one of those is stop being so military erect.
Okay.
Right? And if you're one of those ex-ballet dancers, you know, or yoga people or gymnasts, then you say, oh my gosh, usually once people understand and I show them the relationship between the shoulder blade and their teaching, what they've learned from their masters, right? Then they're just like, oh my God, I've been doing this all wrong. Well, yeah, it made you a great ballet dancer or yoga person or gymnast, but it's causing your body to break down.
But softening my knees or not locking my knees, that's something I know what you mean.
Yes.
Is there something like that that would be like, don't stand up too erect? Well, it's like, well, how do I not do it too much? What's the right amount?
Unfortunately, if you're sitting at a desk or something like that a lot, then your muscles are naturally inactive. And so you can't change that muscular, you can't be at your desk and, you know, start using your shoulder blades to do typing on the computer, because typing on the computer actually activates the scapular depressors as well, because everything is below you, right? You're reaching down to that keyboard. You're not reaching up, right?
Right.
If you sit a lot, then the answer is that we have to fix how you're sitting and your ergonomic setup to support your elbows so that your shoulders are resting maybe an inch higher than normal.
I see. You did say that you wanted your arms up a little bit, your shoulders up a little bit.
Yeah, but I don't want you to actively hold them up, you know, when you're sitting, because then you're just going to start activating all these muscles that are already sore, right? It's an unnatural correction. You want to relax into your corrections. You don't want to strain into your corrections. And that's why if you sit at a desk and you have neck pain and you've done the testing and you've discovered that this is due to a depressed scapula, then you need to change your ergonomics to support the scapula more in a more elevated position. I mean, it only makes sense, right?
Yeah, I like that. You got to relax into your corrections, not strain into your corrections.
Yeah. That's for those of you out there who are strength oriented, that my pain is due to my weakness. Right.
Yeah. You know, you just heard me ask, where do I need to strengthen? You know,
exactly.
I wonder if like hanging from a bar wouldn't be good, because that's like overhead and something like that. I was listening to another podcast where they were saying that, whenever you do bench press, before you do your bench press, you should do something that's the opposite. You know, whether it's the opposite exercise, they actually were saying something lighter, but lots of reps. But just to get it all activated, sort of both directions. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, to go back to your first point about this, there, I think a doctor wrote a book about doing hanging to fix shoulder pain. But they didn't understand why it solved shoulder pain. They just discovered that, when my patients hang, their shoulder pain seems to go away, right? So they wrote a book about it. But they don't understand the mechanics of the scapula to explain why this is happening. And because of that also, they don't understand what they could do that's not hanging that can also solve, because we can't go around, you know, hanging from monkey bars all day long to solve our pain, right? So I was talking with these two physical therapists who were promoting this book. This is like a miracle. Well, and I asked them, why is that working? They had no idea.
It's magic.
I was like, I'll tell you why it's working. So this is the key, is that this is why, you know, at the beginning of your show, you talked about physical therapy is going to this emotional, cognitive, behavioral direction. And we're getting away from actually testing the body to find out what the problem is. The problem is not that physical therapists are lazy and don't want to do testing anymore. The problem is that what we've been taught in school, that is the testing that we need to do, doesn't solve pain. So why test it? It must be something else that's causing pain. And, we haven't really studied the brain that much, and the brain is controlling the body, so that must be where the problem is. Well, in a way it is, because that's where all of your stored habits are held, right? Mm. And so that's also the thing that's creating those cytokines that's activating the myofibroblasts. But that's about the extent of blaming the brain for your pain, right?
Yeah.
So, and you can't figure that stuff out if you don't understand how the body is architecturally put together and how to test those stress points in the body.
Everybody listening, I'm sure, has had a massage or done dry needling, or they got a massage gun and, done a hot tub or taken ibuprofen or, you know, whatever to try to resolve tight muscles or a knot, or ride a foam roller, or, you know, roll on a lacrosse ball. I mean, I'm talking about all the things I've done. And there's probably some value in that, you know, if you've gotten yourself to where you are suffering and that can help you. But it's not dealing with the root cause. And that's what you're talking about. And the root cause, just to go back to the thing that I think is an amazing understanding that you've given to me, is that this stressing of your body comes from all kinds of things. It can come from your exercise, that you're overdoing one thing, or, you know, you overdid something, or you're not recover. Maybe you lift weights every day rather than letting your body recover. But it also comes from just your life and the things that you do. And maybe you've done them wrong or in a way that's stressful for a long time, and it just never bothered you because you were young. Or, you know, maybe you're older and you're more sensitive to pain or whatever. But it's all of that stuff is causing the stress. And you just need to get below the threshold of what made the pain. You don't have to get rid of all the stress. In fact, that's probably our mistake. But you just need to get the stress down. And you can get that down by, you can either exercise less, which I am not a fan of, or you can take the stress out of something else. That's just amazing to me, that revelation.
Yeah, well, again, you'll be frustrated because you're just throwing spaghetti against the wall, trying to see where those problems are. So you need to understand how to test your body to figure out where these stress points are.
Yeah.
And that is ultimately the key. And I want to go back, you know, I'm not dissing physical therapists or chiropractors or massage therapists for what they're doing, because what they're doing is helping people. What I'm offering is a more expanded understanding of how the body works, and you can fit whatever treatment modality you love to use that works for their 40 or 50 or 70% of your patients, and you can expand on that with this information. It's not saying that you're wrong. It's just saying if you house that information in a larger framework, you can see where it fits into why the body has created pain in this person, and it will only make your outcomes better as a result. So this shouldn't be threatening to healthcare professionals. It should be a revelatory, and they should be embracing it, because this will help me get my patients better, and it works.
Fantastic. And this is actually an answer to the thing I complained about at the very beginning, which is if I knew how to test myself, I would then know what to do to solve my pain problem, instead of having to just make a long list of all the things that I ever did to solve my pain problem. I would just have a few tests that I could do that would point to, I mean, of course I would do this set of tests because I got that kind of problem, but then the answers to the test would tell me where does the solution need to focus.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, that solution, for instance, one of the tests in my book, I test for something called femoral retroversion and femoral antiversion. And what those are scary terms that just mean the femur is your thigh bone, right? So femoral retroversion means that the thigh bone is twisted outward. And femoral antiversion means that your thigh bone is twisted inward. Females tend to have more femoral antiversion, and men tend to have more femoral retroversion. All right. And so we and first you test to see whether this is happening in you. But the answer is not to do workouts that will change the shape of my thigh bone. That's impossible. The answer is to change how I'm using my body based on my thigh bone shape. Hmm. And so a lot, women have, I can't remember the exact percentage, but they have a higher propensity for ACL tears in sports. Mm-hmm. So why would this be? Given that all of the training is the same, why would it be? It's because I believe most women tend towards femoral antiversion. What that does is it creates a torque effect across the knee joint if the femoral antiversion isn't controlled well. And that is what shears the ACL. Hmm. Well, what is controlling the thigh bone internal rotation? It would be the butt then, because the butt is one of the strongest muscles in the body, and it is an external rotator of the thigh bone. Hmm. So female athletes, I feel, should have a higher emphasis on gluteal activation during running and strengthening. And we should also be looking at their foot pronation, because the flatter the foot is, the more the knee will internally rotate, which again creates shear across the knee joint. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be supported from both sides, because we're dealing with a structural anomaly. I wouldn't say an anomaly. It's a normal thing. Everyone has some degree of one or the other. It's a spectrum, right? And so you're not dealing with an anomaly. You're just dealing with what is in the body and understanding that. And so this goes back to, Joe, you know, you're a cyclist. All right. And one of the drafting positions for the cyclist is to have your body close into the center of the bike. Mm-hmm. What if you have retroverted femurs and your thigh bone is rotated out, but you're trying to cycle with your knees in all the time? Mm-hmm. Well, then you're robbing your body of its power to generate torque or force through that pedal. Because by bringing the knees in too close to the bike, now you've created an internal rotation component to your hip joint, and you've lost power because you're probably at the end range of your internal rotation while you're trying to do 100,000 repetitions with force. Hmm. So knowledge of these things, I once solved a NFL lineman's ankle and knee pain that he had had for 9 years by just employing this understanding and changing his blocking technique and his strength training technique. Hmm. And he's just like, gosh, no one's ever explained this to me before. It's not because they don't care about you. It's because they're not aware of how all of this plays out in the body. And so what happened was, he never had pain in high school playing football. Once he got to college, all this pain started. Hmm. Why? Because they had the same training technique for every single, this is how you do a squat. This is how you do your blocking. This is how you do everything. It's all regimented, and it had no individuality or understanding of how the body was built in order to magnify the results, right? Mm. And so, you know, he said, well, all of this goes really counter to what I've been trying to do. I said, great. I think you're going to feel a lot better. And within 2 weeks, and this is during training camp, within 2 weeks, all of his 9 years of pain went away. Just from his understanding of that he had one femur that was retroverted and he had one that was less retroverted.
Hmm. Wow.
So this is how it works in the body. So this goes back to your habits then, right? So you could be cycling perfectly, but if you have retroverted femurs, this could be the thing that's irritating your hip, knee, and ankle joints, right? Hmm. Well, how do you know that? You test to understand, but no one has ever talked to you probably about femoral retroversion.
Never heard of it.
Because no one knows about it. And this is because, and this is one of the reasons people don't know about it, is because we're going away from a mechanical based understanding of how our body functions in physical therapy. And we're going more to this cognitive behavioral model of how to treat patients, which is kind of, you know, negating decades of research that has been had up until this point, because we can't seem to solve things. So it's,
yeah,
you know, and we can't blame ourselves. So it's got to be because it must be the brain's fault.
Right. It's too complicated because it's the brain.
But it's so not complicated. This is so simple. I've trained my therapists in this approach in my clinic.
Yeah.
And they're just like, I can't believe how simple it is to solve back pain now, or neck pain, yeah, or any other kind of pain. Once you understand how the body is built and works, you can figure out just about everything. Now, it's not to say that everything can be fixed by changing mechanics, because sometimes those habits, those destructive things that have occurred to your body, have caused tears or herniated discs or stenosis. And a lot of times we can overcome even those kinds of changes in the body, but sometimes we can't. And that's when surgery needs to happen, right? But if you go into your surgery with the same mechanics and problems that you had leading up to your surgery, how can you expect a good outcome from your surgical procedure? Because you're going to be delivering the same hammers to the same tissues that were just operated on.
Yeah. And that reminds me of some older conversations. I'm not even sure if you and I spoke about it, but this idea of damage in the body is what's causing the pain. And
to some extent,
and imaging studies have shown that people with pain and people without pain have the same structures in their bodies. You know, when you get older, things don't look like they did inside of you when you were younger. And some people have pain and some people don't. And so is that the source of the pain? Probably the answer is sometimes yes and sometimes no.
Yeah, well, a study was done looking at disc herniations in people. And the study found that 20-year-olds had a 37% incidence of pain in the presence of a disc herniation. 80-year-olds had a 10% incidence of pain with a disc herniation.
Wow.
Now, does that mean that 80-year-olds are tougher than 20-year-olds? No. It means that disc herniations are a normal part of aging in a way, and that they don't necessarily mean that that's where back pain is coming from. We have normal changes, structural changes to our body that is occurring as we age that may have nothing or everything to do with your pain. But you won't know that if you don't actually test why you're having pain in the first place. So this is why an MRI of a disc bulges and disc herniations in a 60-year-old, the doctor may say, you know what, let's send you to physical therapy or a chiropractic or a massage or something like that to see if we can solve this. Whereas if you saw that in a 20-year-old, you'd be like, I think you need surgery. This is part of the decision process.
Got it. All right. Well, as we wrap it up, you know, is there anything else that you'd want to share with us? And then tell us how we can find your new book. Is it out? All that.
Yeah, the book is probably going to be out around November, between the 5th and the 11th, somewhere around there.
Okay.
And my website is rickolderman.com. The book will be available on Amazon. I'll have a link on Amazon to that book on my website. And also, one of the nice things about the book is I have videos that accompany all the tests and the exercises in the book. So you don't just have to look at pictures and read words. You can actually see what I'm talking about and test it yourself.
Nice.
It functions as a workbook, the second half does. So you'll be recording your answers in the book, because you'll never be able to hold all this information in your head.
As I know.
Right? Yeah. So you got to test yourself and record your answers. And that way you can see where the problems are and start putting these pieces together for yourself.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Glad to have you back. And thanks for helping us out again.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing, Rick. Have a good one. Thank you so much for joining my conversation with Rick Olderman. You can find more information about Rick in the show notes.